The Rich Zeoli Show podcast is sponsored by Mike Venaria Jr. with Osperity Private Wealth.
Hi, I'm Mike Venaria Jr., Wealth Management Specialist. Make your retirement dreams a reality by creating your retirement plan today. Call me at 856-252-0107.
A lot to chat about, a lot going on. And, you know, as I was thinking about this big breaking news, because the question I keep getting asked all the time, you know, is, do you think there'll be charges? Do you think there'll be charges? Well, this is a big deal. This is a big first step. The fact that they've announced this is a huge, huge deal. And the fact that they've announced the grand jury to look into this probably means that there will be some indictments. The old saying is, you can get a grand jury to indict a ham sandwich. You know that old saying. Of course, you've heard this. But it's D.C., so then you have to factor that in. But yeah, that news just broke. The DOJ orders a grand jury in the Russia hoax probe. Breaking news here on the show today, and we'll keep you posted on that throughout the afternoon. So great stuff. Who will they start with? My guess is Brennan and Clapper. That would be my guess, and underlings of them. I don't know if they'll go right for the big fish right away, but this is very, very troubling for a whole lot of people. Because, you know, the people that were engaged in this, and I think Stephen Miller, the White House Deputy Chief of Staff, put it incredibly succinctly yesterday on Maria Bartiromo's Sunday show, when he, in about 90 seconds, laid it out very beautifully about what these people did. And he's a really articulate guy, brilliant, very, very bright guy. Laid it all out. The conspiracy is why the statute of limitations, as you know from listening to my interview with Will Chamberlain a few weeks ago, is why the statute of limitations is not something you have to worry about here because of all the people that were engaged in this. Now, let's assume the grand jury indicts some people. Let's assume that now that the attorney general has ordered this grand jury, they show the grand jury the evidence and they hand out some indictments. First of all, it will be the trial of the century. I mean, I know that that's a cliche, but holy cow. Now, there are no cameras in federal court, but will there even be a trial? Will people cop to pleas? Will people just start, you know, because a lot of times what they do in these things is they go after people who will sing. You know, instead of going after the top tier, instead of going after the Don of the mob family, not that the mafia exists, it's not true, it's not real, but if it were, you go to the underlings. You know, you go to the button pushers, you know what I mean? And you start assembling your case that way. You get some people to plead guilty in exchange for immunity or shortened sentences, and they point fingers and they name names, and then you have to obviously give them protective custody because you're dealing with the mafia, or in this case, much worse, the Clintons. So there needs to be 24-hour suicide watch on each and every one of these individuals. But I would imagine that's probably how you go. So the people that were around these people, you start going after some of them. Indict some of them, scare them. They're not names. They're not flashy names. But say they worked with Brennan. They worked with Clapper. They worked with Comey. They worked with Clinton. They worked with Soros. You get some of them. You indict them. You scare the bejesus out of them because they don't have the kind of money to make, to hire big legal teams. And then they flip. And then you're able to go after the big fish. You know what I mean? That's how you bring down a crime family. That's how you do that. So let's play Stephen Miller, White House Deputy Chief of Staff Stephen Miller, and how he laid out this whole conspiracy as he was talking to Maria Bartiromo about this. One egregious felony after another. This is from yesterday. Cut number three.
The Russia collusion hoax against President Trump remains the single greatest hoax and the greatest assault on our democracy in the history of this country. There's no comparison. There's no parallel to anything else. It was a coup. And I'm using that term literally. It was a coup to overthrow a democratically elected government, a coup carried out by the intelligence apparatus of this country, by the deep state, by Hillary Clinton and the Democrat Party. the new information that has been revealed by the Director of National Intelligence and by the FBI eliminates any scintilla of doubt about the intention, the premeditation, the planning and orchestration of this conspiracy. It meets all of the criminal elements of a seditious conspiracy against the United States. It meets the criminal elements of an insurrection. It meets the criminal elements of a conspiracy against the government and the criminal elements of a conspiracy to deprive citizens of their civil rights under color of law. One egregious felony after another. And because it is a conspiracy, as demonstrated by the forethought of realizing and documenting that they understood that this was fake from the beginning, meeting the mens rea standard in law. Because of that, because it is a conspiracy, every single individual actor is now part of that conspiracy. So that includes Brennan and Clapper and Comey and Hillary and Schiff and everybody else who knowingly and willfully perpetrated this plot, this coup, this conspiracy, this scheme against President Trump and the government of the United States. And now is the time and the hour and the moment for accountability so that we can reclaim this democracy, Maria.
The mens rea, the state of mind. These people knew what they were doing. Okay, that's a very important point. They knew what they were doing. They purposely did this. Remember I said to you last week, the alleged email, and I use that word alleged for a reason, because the only way to know for sure if it's real is to authenticate it. But even if it's authenticated, what matters is what a jury decides in a court case or if this is a matter for Congress. So we're referring to it as the alleged email. This is the alleged email that said HRC personally signed off on this. And this is the Soros guy who says, you know, Julie is doing this with HRC saying to do this and basically kicking off the whole Russia collusion thing, whereby they know it's all BS. They know that it's all made up by the campaign. They get the FBI to go all in. The FBI goes all in. This is all to distract from Hillary Clinton's emails and her own server and God only knows what else and what's on those emails. And, you know, last week we had a caller to the show who suggested perhaps maybe some of those missing emails have to do with how much money the Clintons have made. Well, you know what? Nothing would surprise me. In politics, you have to change the subject. If you have a problem, you change the subject. If you can't hang a lantern on your problems, as they say, then you have to find a way to make somebody talk about something else. That's what they did. If this email is real, the one that says HRC is saying to do all this, then what they basically said was this. Look, we got a problem here with this whole email thing and the server and the missing emails, and this ain't going away anytime soon. So we need to make everybody believe Donald Trump is a Russian agent. All right? We got to make everybody believe the Russians hacked Hillary's emails. This way, if any of the emails come out, we can say, well, they were manipulated by the Russians and the Russians are doing this and they're doing this because they want Trump to win. And that's what we're going to do. Ready, team, go. And the CIA knows it's all BS, but the CIA goes with it anyway. And the FBI knows it's all BS because the CIA told them it's all BS and the FBI doesn't care and they go with it anyway. And the Obama White House knows it's all BS because the CIA told them it's all BS and they don't care and they go with it anyway. And then there you go. Comey as the head of the FBI, Clapper as the head of the National Intelligence, and Brennan as the head of the CIA. They're at the top of the chain here along with the President of the United States, Barack Obama, the Vice President, Joe Biden, and then all the people in their orbit, in their universe of scoundrels and scumbags. But there's all kinds of other people whose names we have not heard. And those people are the first ones you go after in this. They're the first ones that you indict. And you indict them and you scare the hell out of them with, you know, seditious conspiracy and all the terms that you just heard Stephen Miller say there. And you could spend the entire rest of your life in prison. You know, rest of your life in prison. Which, believe it or not, is far scarier to most people than the death penalty. Like, I'd rather, if I had a life sentence, I would 100% rather. I would try to get whacked on day one. You know what I mean? Like a old school prison shiv. Like, no way I can stomach prison. Like, no chance. So they gave me a chance, like firing squad or life in prison. I'd be like, firing squad, let's do this and get this over with and, you know, everybody move on. I mean, after I exhausted my appeals, of course. But that's me. You know what I mean? I've seen enough prison shows to know I couldn't do it like a day. I couldn't even do like a take your kid to work day at prison. Like, thank God my dad was a cop and not a corrections officer, because I couldn't have survived that. So there's no way I would handle that. So when my last appeal was exhausted and the governor won't weigh in and the president won't weigh in or whatever it is, I'd be like, all right, is there a firing squad option? No. All right. Well, then I got to find a way to Epstein myself, because I'm not, no friggin' way am I doing this for the next God only knows how many years if I had a life sentence. It's a very scary prospect. But you know what else is scary? Legal bills. Legal bills are also a very scary prospect for people. So you go to these people who have pretty good life. You know, they're living in suburban D.C., Potomac, Maryland, and places like that, Montgomery County, Maryland, somewhere in Virginia, you know, like Arlington or someplace like that, and Alexandria. They have a nice life, nice suburban life. Their kids go to fancy private schools and they're saving for college. Now they're indicted for helping to promulgate the Russiagate hoax, and they're looking at hundreds of thousands of dollars in legal bills because they're going to have to hire very expensive Washington attorneys, who criminal defense attorneys, who charge $1,000 an hour minimum. Probably more. I mean, I don't know what the going rate is these days for a Washington, D.C. criminal defense attorney who's good, but I'm guessing minimum a G-note. Minimum. And so you're looking at hundreds of thousands of dollars of legal bills at the very least. And you might be looking at that on top of prison time. So then the government comes to you and says, well, we'll make you a deal. We don't really want you. Nobody's ever heard of you. We want them. So give us something good. And, you know, maybe you'll do like a week, or you go pick up trash along the Beltway or something like that. You know what I mean? Spend a day volunteering at Arlington National Cemetery. You know, a little community service. Or go to prison and have $600,000 of legal bills. What do you want to do here? I mean, that's the way to go after these people. And if Bondi has now assembled a grand jury, she'll get indictments. Remember, a grand jury's job is to indict. That's not a high bar. It's the government just simply saying there's enough evidence here to go forward with a charge. We're charging you with something and found you guilty of anything, but we, the grand jury, believe there's enough evidence here to go to for at least the government to make a case to then prove in court whether or not you're guilty, or for the government to try to prove your guilt beyond a reasonable doubt. And that's the process. And the government, particularly the feds, are famous for getting people to cop to please. They're famous for it. So while I say it would be the trial of the century, it would, if it ever gets to trial. But they're also famous for cutting plea deals with people, especially when they want to get a big fish. And then you get the trial of the century when you get the big fish. Now, I'm not going to sit here and give you false hope that that's going to be, say, Hillary Clinton or George Soros or James Clapper or John Brennan or James. I'm not going to do that. Other people will. I'm not. But what I'm saying is, if that were to occur, like if the underlings were to give them enough evidence to say, yeah, these people had absolute intent here. They knew the Russia thing was nonsense. They didn't care. And we were all told to shut up. Remember last week, Tulsi Gabbard came out and said there were these whistleblowers. Brave whistleblowers who came forward at the Office of National Intelligence, who came forward and said, and Matt, do we still have the audio of that from Friday's or Thursday's show? I believe it was, or Friday's show.
I believe it was.
Yeah, if you could. Thank you. Brave whistleblowers who came forward. I think she was on with Jesse Waters, if I'm not mistaken, and said that they were told, go along with this or else. Go along with this Or, well, you, those whistleblowers will now be, they'll be witnesses. And they'll tell their story and they'll name names. And so now you sit down with an underling who doesn't want to cooperate and says, well, you know, we've got whistleblower A who says you carried out the orders of James Comey, even though you knew this was all BS. And you're looking at some serious hard time here. That's how you get a big fish. That's how you get a trial of the century. That's how you get somebody who would then want to roll the dice on a trial. Because the big names would probably, I can say with almost certainty, risk it with a DC jury. You know what I mean? And then appeals and then expensive lawyers. Like, the idea of Hillary Clinton seeing a courtroom are low because of a couple factors. She'll have attorneys who will be able to keep going and going and going, and they'll have delays and they'll make motions for change of venues and just things to just delay the process and nonsense. But they would roll the dice with a jury in Washington, D.C. You know what I mean? Like, so they would do like procedural moves, and I'm not an attorney, so I don't know all the little gimmicks they have. But the reason why these people charge minimum $1,000 an hour, and I'm sure for the real good ones, it's a whole lot more. And I'm sure it's probably for a Washington, D.C. criminal attorney who would represent somebody like that, you're talking probably $20-$30 an hour at least, minimum, maybe a little bit more. They're good at just kind of slowing the process down, you know, delaying things, if you will. And then they'd risk it on a jury, and then they'd risk it on an appeal, and then they'd risk it on maybe a Democrat getting in the White House and pardoning everybody. So there's no way in hell the big names, in my opinion, would ever cop to any of this. Clinton, Comey, Brennan, Clapper, nah, they would risk it. They would risk their day in court, hoping they could run up a clock, hoping it'd be a Democrat administration, hoping that the Democrat administration would pardon them, and hoping that this could all go away. That's how I see that playing out. But the person who's an underling who you've never heard of before, who carried a lot of this stuff out on their behest, that person does not have the luxury of time or big money attorneys or a presidential pardon, counting on the idea that maybe a Democrat might be in the White House, doesn't have the celebrity status, doesn't have those things, doesn't have the mouthpiece that the corporate media will afford them. So they'll be very scared. And that's the difference. Matt, do you have them just out of curiosity, just the audio of that?
I need like another minute.
All right. Let me tell you about, in the meantime then, as you look for that from the other day's show, let me tell you about, let's see if I can pull this up here. I'll tell you about, see where we are right now, Dr. Mike Veneri, the Big Story sponsor. It is Mama Zioli's birthday, and Mama Zioli has a beautiful smile. She brought Dr. Mike Veneri to our family, and I would like you to use him for your family. You know why? It is about care. It is about compassion. That's who Dr. Mike Veneria is. So make him your dentist. Two locations to serve you. VeneriaDental.com. All right, quick break. We'll come right back, and more to come on this breaking news that Pam Bondi has assembled a grand jury in D.C. Don't go away.
The Rich Zioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
Breaking news. Attorney General Pam Bondi convening a grand jury in Washington, D.C. to look into the Russiagate hoax. Welcome back. Glad you're here today. 855-839-1210 on X at Rich Zioli. I'm trying to understand this comment from Justin Kramer. Oh, here goes Rich trying to blackpill people. Rich, they are all going down. I'm not quite sure how me explaining how this process is probably going to play out is blackpilling anybody. I'm also trying to manage expectations because there'll be plenty of hosts who will tell you that Hillary Clinton's going to be going to prison and Barack Obama's going to be going to prison and all these other people. Those people are not being realistic here. I'm not saying that they may not end up going to prison, but we're a long way from that. I mean, assembling a grand jury is step one here. But I'm explaining the process and how this will go out. how go forward, which means you go to the underlings, you scare them to flip on the people at the top, and then you go after the people at the top. The people at the top with the power and the money are the people you go after last, but they're also the people with the power and the money, which is why they're able to delay things. And I'm not sure how that's blackpilling anyone. I'm not quite sure what my goal would be to blackpill someone here. I want to see these people punished probably more than anybody does, but there's also a realistic legal process at play here in federal court that these very expensive Washington attorneys are really good at exploiting, which is why they charge so much per hour, 15, 20 bucks, whatever it is. I don't know what the going rate is for an attorney in D.C. This is what Tulsi Gabbard told Glenn Beck last week about whistleblowers, and these whistleblowers will be key to for the feds to lean on the people that worked around Brennan, Clapper, Comey, Clinton, people that were from the campaign, et cetera, to say to them, cop a deal, cop it, you know, flip, make a deal with us, or else you're going to prison. Because we have whistleblowers who've come forward who said you did this and we're going to throw the book at you, or you can help us out here. Because that's how the feds like to roll. This is what Tulsi said to Glenn Beck. Take a listen.
How many people are you surrounded by that are still part of that old system?
It's a good question. As we're finding these documents, going through them, declassifying and releasing them, we are learning more about who is actually directly involved and implicated in this. We're learning more about who may have been in the room and who was loudly protesting against it, recognizing how wrong it was. We have whistleblowers coming forward with their own documentation of their protests and their unwillingness to go along with this. So, yes, there are people who are still working within the intelligence community who had a hand in this. As we are identifying them, it will give us the opportunity to make sure that they and others like them, who, again, are so willing to weaponize intelligence to subvert the will of the American people, can no longer work in the intelligence community.
Well, we certainly don't want them working in the intelligence community. But, you know, the question is, if we're going to have a grand jury assembled here and we hand out indictments against people, then those whistleblowers are going to be key. You know, if you, for example, I mean, if you had somebody who said, and this is what Tulsi said, she said there were people who were told, shut up and go along with this Russia collusion stuff. And they were like, I don't want to. And they said, well, shut up and go along with it anyway. If those people are willing to testify against people, that's a really big deal. You know what I mean? That's a really big deal for holding people accountable. All you need is a couple credible people in each department to start coming forward and saying what they personally witnessed, and you can start, you know, now again, you're dealing with a jury in Washington, D.C., so you got to be mindful of that. You're dealing with a lengthy legal process, but if a couple, you get a couple underlings to plea out with the government, right? So, like, let's use a mafia analogy since we're talking about conspiracy theories and everything. I mean, we're talking about conspiracy under the law. So, RICO, you get a guy who, you know, did a mob hit, who flips for the government, who's willing to get other people and name names to avoid jail, get a reduced sentence, whatever it is. And he starts naming capos and everybody else. I mean, that's ultimately how you bring down the big fish. That's ultimately how you get to the head of the family. You know, Donnie Brasco doesn't go after Lucky because he's looking at Lucky. Lucky's the entree into the family. But Lucky's broke and doesn't have the money to mount the kind of criminal defense that the capo has. So that's the method by which you do it. And then these whistleblowers play a big role in that, because then the government gets to say to these people, hey, listen, we got you here. We got your emails. We got your, you know, your phone records. You're part of this conspiracy and you're looking at 30 years in prison. Unless you work with us here, because this is who we really want. All right, let me Let me do that. We'll bring Bill in. Let's do that. Let's bring Bill DeAgostino in from the Media Research Center, Newsbusters, and the great work that he does over there. He's on X at @band_Bill. Is he there? Do we have Bill?
Yeah, how's it going, Rich?
Bill, how are you, buddy? What's going on?
I'm doing great, man. Doing great. I like what you're digging into here with the with how you go after these people in this criminal conspiracy. And it's, let me just say, it is itself criminal how little interest the media have in this. We're still cataloging some of it right now, and it's like finding a needle in a haystack over and over again. They barely want to talk about any of this stuff.
So what do they want to talk about? As you guys do your analysis at the Media Research Center of what they're focusing on, what are they talking about?
There's been a lot of a kind of uptick in interest in the Texas redistricting now that that's mm-hmm. actually starting to look like a real certainty that they don't really have any recourse to. So we've seen quite a few anchors kind of begging Democrat guests to please do something, anything, which is awesome. And there's still a decent amount of Epstein stuff going on. I mean, they love their Epstein all of a sudden. They didn't for the last 4 years, but now they do. I'm not really sure what changed with that, why the sudden change of heart. But hey, welcome to the party, guys.
Yeah, it was funny. Friday night, I was on Fox News, and they asked us the question, you know, why Democrats keep bringing up Epstein. And it is really funny how they have just never, ever brought up Jeffrey Epstein before, ever.
Right.
And now they can't shut up about him. And, yeah, I mean, I want the truth to come out about Jeffrey Epstein, too. But it's like a welcome to the party, pal moment. And it's so obvious that it's distracting. It's purely a distraction.
Right.
The media's fascination with that. I mean, I get why Chuck Schumer's saying it, but the fact that the media is now suddenly covering this when they didn't give a damn about the story.
Yeah, no, exactly. I've been saying this for like the past week, which is, yeah, I too would like to see these files come out. I support that. But I'm not interested in involving anybody in the conversation who either is in the media and ignored it for the last 4 years and had no interest in it whatsoever, or who was in power at some point in the last 4 years and made no attempt to release any of this stuff. Right. So, I mean, look, there was a point where Democrats had the trifecta. Nobody was even thinking about Epstein at that point in left wing world. Right. So you're not invited to this conversation. You don't get to tell us that you want the files out, right? Like you can go sit in the corner while we discuss what to do with the files, and once we make a decision, you can come back in. But you're like you rescinded your right to participate in this conversation, right? Because you clearly weren't interested except for when it became a convenient political distraction.
Exactly. Well said, Bill. That's exactly right. Like this is an internal family fight right now about what to do, about how to handle this and what to put out there. And this is between us and Kash Patel and Dan Bongino and Pam Bondi and President Trump and his supporters. And you guys shut up because you didn't care. You were in charge. You did nothing on this. And that's a whole other reason why we are talking about this, because you guys did nothing about it. Like if you had pursued this, then we probably would not be talking about Jeffrey Epstein right now. But you didn't.
Right.
And it's also phony because now that they're not in charge, like I love these when they're not in charge and then they suddenly start screaming about things that they could have done when they were in charge, whether it's Epstein, right, or the price of whatever. And it's like, well, why didn't you do something about it then?
Yeah. Yeah, no, exactly. And I mean, the most like maddening, insane part of when Democrats were still in power was seeing Kamala Harris running as a reform candidate as the incumbent vice president. That was like was like mind blowing to me.
Yes.
It was like not only could you be doing something about this right now and you're not because you've had no interest in it, but now you're campaigning on changing it. Like do it right now. Go ahead.
Yeah.
You know, what are we talking about here?
Yeah. But even though she was a change candidate, I still can't get over the fact that on The View, she couldn't name anything she would change. That was amazing to me.
Yes, yes, that was incredible. That was incredible. I don't know if I brought this up at the time, but I was watching Oh Brother, Where Art Thou at some point because my girlfriend had never
seen
it.
That's a great movie.
And it was sometime during, like, late in the 2024 election cycle, and you get to that scene where Pappy O'Daniel is sitting there and he's, like, seething because everybody likes the reform candidate, and his idiot son, who's also his campaign manager, goes, "Daddy, maybe we should get us some of that reform." And he goes, "You can't run reform when you're the dang incumbent." You know, and he, like, he chews him out. And I that line hit me so hard because I was like, well, hold on, Pappy O'Daniel. Maybe you can if the entire media let you and just gaslight the American people into, no, of course, that's fine. You can totally do that. That's perfectly reasonable.
And at least he was smart enough that if they said to him, what would you like to reform? He would have had something to reform. Whereas Kamala Harris was like, nothing comes to mind. Nothing.
No, I cannot. Nothing comes to mind. I can't think of a thing I would change about the Biden presidency.
As I'm the
incredible
change candidate. All right. So starting with the media begging the Texas issue and this redistricting thing, you know what I find fascinating is that Gavin Newsom is literally trying to do the exact same thing in California. And that is getting zero media coverage right now.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it will start getting coverage if he actually, like, goes through with it and starts like proceeding with it in a meaningful way. And the coverage it will get will abruptly shift from that it's not happening to it is actually happening. And that's a good thing. This is great.
Right.
You know, but people on the left are kind of under this weird delusion that Democrats have been playing nice with gerrymandering forever, and that this is some, like, just untoward, out of left field attack on fairly districted states all over the country. And they're saying, oh, well, now we'll retaliate. You know, you shouldn't do this, Republicans, because we'll start retaliating. It's like, no. Texas is retaliation. This is retaliation. This is Republicans playing your game for like the first time in Texas in a meaningful way. Right. So it's kind of funny how they have these, like, well, when the shoe's on the other foot, you won't like us in power. And it's like, right, but you do this stuff anyway.
Yeah.
Right. So now that incentive is kind of out the window. Right. That threat is no longer valid if you would do it regardless of what the Republicans did.
The problem is that most people hearing this conversation, I mean, our audience is educated and informed, but so excluding them, most people hearing that would think redistricting, why is Texas doing this? Nobody's ever done this before. They wouldn't know about all the time, right? I mean, and that's the problem is that they don't cover when it happens in Illinois.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is, we talk a lot about bias by omission in the media at MRC. This is something slightly different in that it's not that they're omitting anything that's like involving the current story that they're talking about, but it's the dramatic omission of context and this theatrical performance as though, like, the context that would be applicable doesn't exist. There is no context.
Right.
Right. So that happened a lot during the first Trump administration. They would call things unprecedented when there was very clear existing precedent for it. Right. That happened during the invocation of the nuclear option to start confirming Supreme Court justices. Mm-hmm. They were like, this is crazy. How could you be doing it? And it's like, well, because Harry Reid did it. Harry Reid did it. That's why we're doing it now, because Harry Reid started it. Right. Like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
But they never bring up that context. And so for anybody listening who either has the memory of a goldfish or wasn't paying attention back then, they think, wow, Republicans are being so bellicose. They're being so aggressive and just not playing by the rules.
Bill DeAgostino is with us, Media Research Center. So let's go to the unbiased journalist, George Stephanopoulos. Of course, no relation to George Stephanopoulos, who was the Clinton hatchet man, communications director, and the guy who threatened the press that you'll never work in this town again. Totally
crazy
different
resemblance,
guy.
But no relation. It,
yeah, well, you know, I mean, this George Stephanopoulos was stuck in an elevator. That George Stephanopoulos was actually crushed to death by an elevator. Do you know that? tragic situation. But so here's the unbiased journalist, George Stephanopoulos. This is Cut 33.
Our democracy is threatened. Our democracy is really threatened by what the Republicans are proposing to do in Texas right now.
Is there any way to stop it?
Well, I think there are a number of ways in which we can try to stop it. If you look at the people who've testified at the hearings, 101 people have testified against it. Editorial boards in the media in Texas have opined against it. The polling shows that the people in Texas are, in fact, against it. So I think that's one of the ways in which you try to stop it from actually happening. And then if they put in place this really unbelievable gerrymander, mid-cycle gerrymander, we have the capacity to bring litigation. And we already were in litigation against the state of Texas for the gerrymander that they did in 2020. This really exacerbates that which they've already done and strengthens the case that we have brought. So there are mechanisms that we can try to use. And in addition to that, I think that responsible Democrats in other states have to take into account the threat to our democracy, the need to preserve our democracy so that we can ultimately try to heal it. And I would hope that they will take steps that are, again, as I said, temporary, but responsible.
And we're seeing talk about that in California. We're seeing talk about that in New York as well. But those attempts are more long shots, aren't they?
So what I love about the unbiased journalist is that when he gives political advice vis-a-vis the form of asking a question.
Right.
It's really a unique talent the guy has.
Right. Right. I mean, and of course, George Stephanopoulos has a lot of experience being in politics, not just covering it. So he's actually somebody who some of these Democrats heed his advice. And right. So it carries more weight than, say, like an Erin Burnett, like asking an earnest question because she doesn't even understand like the statute that she's now doing a segment on for some reason. But it's funny, right? He says, like, isn't there any way to stop it? Like begging Eric Holder to come up with something, and then just lets him go off on this long explanation of basically no. But here's all the things that we're doing to make it look like we're trying.
Yeah.
Right. Including, oh, there's a bunch of people writing op-eds in the media. And it's like, Eric, what time do you think it is? Do you think that Republicans are going to say, oh, whoa, hold on. We can't wield power to our benefit. Somebody wrote an op-ed in the New York Times that says we shouldn't do that. Right? Like, give me a break.
There's another person now begging Democrats to fight Trump. This is Susan Glasser from the New York Magazine, I guess, is the public. I didn't even know they were still around.
Is it? It's New York Magazine. Right? I think I said the New Yorker, but I think you're right. I think it's New York Magazine. I mix rags up sometimes.
Yeah,
I apologize.
No, it's okay. I don't know if they're even really. The fact that Rolling Stone still exists just still blows my mind after that
rape
on a campus in Virginia story that they got so wrong. But all right, so set this one up for us.
Yeah. So this is specifically in reaction to Kamala Harris saying on Colbert that she doesn't want to run for governor because she thinks that, quote unquote, the system is broken. And that was just such an interesting moment, I think, for a lot of people, because usually when you hear some interview with a politician, like a successful politician, and it's like a life story kind of interview, like, wow, looking back, how did you come here? How did you get here? They'll ask, what got you into politics? And the person will always say, well, I just felt like everything was broken and I felt the need to fix it. And now here's Kamala Harris saying, well, you know, it's broken, so I don't want to be in politics anymore. And it's not broken just because you lost an election, Kamala. The fact that you can't get elected is actually the system working phenomenally. But but regardless, Susan Glasser is very upset that she has taken this tack and is dropping out of politics when we need fighters.
Well, let's take a listen.
This comes against the backdrop of this debate that we saw in the Senate between right. Cory Booker, Amy Klobuchar. You referenced it, but this idea about how to fight back against Donald Trump.
Yeah, I mean, what's extraordinary is that you've seen Donald Trump's shock and awe campaign unleashed on the federal government and segments of the American people over the last 6 months. And you have Democrats still having a circular fight about this. And I have to say, Simone, like, I get the idea that she's, you know, going to do what she's going to do. But to define that as leadership right now. And I get the idea that, you know, there's many Americans who are suffering right now as a result of, you know, what they perceive to be the Trump administration's policies. But saying, well, I'm going to wash my hands of the fight because the system is broken, I find that hard to believe, just as a matter of politics, that that's going to be a winning message for Democrats next year in the midterm election.
I mean, Bill, as I hear this, I think Democrats should take a gigantic sigh of relief that Kamala Harris doesn't want to run again. I mean, right. She's a horrible candidate, and not a single Democrat voted for her in the primary to be their nominee. She's terrible. Yep. She can't do interviews. She can't talk. She sounds like she's drunk all the time. She probably is. This is a gift to them.
Yeah, it is funny that she's saying, I don't think saying I'm scared to fight, I'm dropping out is a winning message. And it's like, okay, well, you're right in the abstract, but in this particular case, Susan, you're actually very wrong. The most winning message Democrats could have is we're not running Kamala Harris. Like, I guarantee it. That is a winning message for Democrats. I understand that, like, the broader point she's making, which is, okay, it's not a winning position to say, well, we're not going to fight because the system is broken. But polling has actually shown that a lot of people, including Democrat voters, support Democrats occasionally giving Trump credit when he gets a win, right? Mm. Which suggests that the national sentiment is very much trending away from obstruct Trump at all costs on literally everything that he wants to do, right? Like, if he wants to tie his shoes, you send somebody from some oversight body to go and ask him exactly where he got those shoes, if those shoelaces were made in Russia, and if there's any kind of recording device in the sole of his shoe, right? So it's like they're not interested in that anymore. The American people actually don't want that, even Democrats. So I think this is more Susan Glasser saying she personally wants Democrats to fight because she is so in a tizzy over everything that Trump does that she needs her security blanket, right? She needs the comfort of knowing that somebody somewhere with a D next to their name is trying to stop all of this horrible madness.
Bill, we're going to take a quick break. Just you got time to hang with us because I want to go through Harry Enten with you before you run.
Yeah, absolutely. Can do.
All right, great. We'll do that, and we'll be right back.
The Rich Cioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
Welcome back. We are joined by our buddy Bill D'Agostino from the Media Research Center. He's on X at @band_Bill, where they keep a watchful eye on the corporate legacy media. Bill, I noticed last week that a bunch of crazy people went to a Republican congressman's home with a coffin. Because, you know, that's what you do when you're crazy and you're on the left. You just bring a coffin to a congressman's house. This is part of the problem I think Democrats have right now is that they're led by crazy people. That and the fact that they turned a attractive woman wearing jeans into some sort of Nazi eugenics propaganda piece. They're crazy, and the polling shows that they're crazy and they're not popular.
Yeah, I mean the point has been made 1,000 times by smarter people than I at this point, but. The idea of you finding Sidney Sweeney attractive makes you a Nazi is not considered good voter outreach by most people. Good luck with it. I hope that the only person who's actually negatively impacted by this that matters, because Democrats are negatively impacted by it, but who cares? I hope that Sidney Sweeney actually weathers the storm here because she's so far been pretty phenomenal about not sticking her nose into politics and opining on things that she doesn't really have much business opining on. Now that it turns out that she's a Republican, I guess she's not going to have that route of, coming out and saying some dumb Trump bashing thing. So that's kind of nice. But I hope that she hangs in there because she doesn't deserve any of this. She's kind of just a martyr of this Democrat firestorm over basically nothing.
So CNN's pollster Harry Enten got into a little bit about just how unpopular Democrats are. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah. Harry Enten is endlessly entertaining, whether he's talking about good news for Democrats or bad news for Democrats. But this time it is very, very bad news for Democrats. He is flabbergasted at how unpopular they are and at how disorganized they are. And he's got some pretty choice words for them.
Take a listen.
Where are Democrats, though, right now, and how divided they are, you know, historically speaking, looking at 2020?
Yeah, I would just say that at this particular point, Democrats at this point are historically divided. It is a complete and utter mess. It is messier than a hoarder's basement.
Is that because where how people view the Democratic Party right now, is that contributing to this?
Yeah, I think that that is in large part of what's going on, is one of the reasons why there is no front runner. Nobody wants to put anybody up at the top of their ballot list, is because at this particular point, the Democratic brand is in the basement. It is total and complete garbage in the mind of the American public. The Democratic Party's net favorable rating, record lows in all three. Wall Street Journal, 30 points underwater. CNN, 26 points underwater. Gallup, 26 points underwater. And that is being driven in large part by discontent within the Democratic base. The Democratic base wants something different. We'll ultimately end up seeing who they choose. It'll be quite the thing who ultimately gets the rose.
Wow. Everybody hates them, but they hate themselves the most, Bill.
Yeah. Yeah, that, I mean, that's what he's saying there, right, is that the record unfavorability is not just independents. It's their own base being completely dissatisfied with them. And now, to be fair, I mean, if you think about it, a Democratic voter who's not like a party leader has not chosen a presidential candidate for their party since Barack Obama.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, Hillary Clinton was selected. Joe Biden was absolutely selected. And Kamala Harris was foisted upon them. Right. Yeah. So they haven't really had their say. Now, unfortunately for them, what the Democratic Party base has been doing is actually in the interest of winning general elections, right? Because, or sorry, what the Democratic Party establishment has been doing by picking these more establishment Democrat figures. These are people that have a lot more likelihood to actually appeal to an independent or a disaffected Republican. If you run AOC and please the base, I think you're in for a pretty bad surprise about what most of the American people think. And their brand being so hurt, being so underwater, doesn't really help with that.
Well said, my friend. Have a great rest of your week. Bill D'Agostino, on X at @Band_Bill. Thanks, buddy. And we'll be right back with Nonstop Talk. Don't go away.
The Rich Cioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.